I suck in a breath. Even though things have been getting more serious with Tom, I'm still surprised to hear him say that, especially given his relative lack of previous relationship experience. I'm surprised, but not unhappy. Just the opposite, in fact. Maybe he's finally ready to forget that dead girl from high school. That sounds very nice, I say. And just like that, I have a boyfriend. Chapter 39. 2 months later. Sydney. Tom drinks his coffee with half a packet of sugar. He always prepares it the same way. When the waitress brings him his coffee, he picks up the sugar packet, pinches it in the middle, and then empties exactly half of it into his coffee. If it's not enough, he will tip the packet to get a few more grains of sugar into the black liquid. It's practically scientific the way he always does it. When you have been dating someone for 2 months, you start to notice these things about them. It's when the cracks start to show. What would happen if you accidentally drank a coffee with an entire pack of sugar? I ask as I watch him go through his ritual. It's Sunday afternoon and we're having a lazy brunch together at a diner. Well, I would die, obviously. Tom grins at me. And what about you? What would happen if you didn't drown your coffee in, like, half a cup of cream? Hey, it's not that much. It isn't? Look at your cup. You're basically drinking cream with just a tiny bit of coffee in it. Okay, he isn't entirely wrong, so we both have our quirks. But in general, most of his quirks are very tolerable. He's been to my apartment many times, and he never leaves the toilet seat up, or pisses on the seat, or uses half the toilet paper in one shot. And he's just generally pretty good about the toilet, which is kind of where a lot of guys go wrong. He's got plenty of other good qualities, besides his superior toilet habits. He's generous. He always pays for everything when we're together. And whenever they ask in a store if he wants to round up for charity, he always says yes. He likes the same kind of movies as I do, or at least he's pretending to. He can be laugh-out-loud funny sometimes, and if I end up with one of my epic bleeding episodes, whether from my nose or a finger or God knows what, he doesn't get freaked out, which is a bit of a miracle after other guys. He's also spectacular in bed. I stand by my initial assessment of unbecredge-fabulous. Not that it's all great. Like Jake, he is a workaholic. He's at the hospital a lot, including weekends. And the worst part is thinking about what he does when he's there. He's cutting up dead bodies. Sometimes he will come to my apartment after work, and I can't help but think about it as he's kissing me. Even more disturbing is the fact that he feels like kissing me after what he's been doing all day. But I guess he's been doing it so long it's become normal to him. It probably doesn't bother him at all. While I'm finishing off the last of my French toast, a little boy runs past our table, his parents close behind. The boy is maybe 3 years old and pretty darn adorable. He's wearing a set of overalls and his hair is blonde and curly. Tom watches the progress of the kid, a slightly tender expression on his face. Cute kid, I comment. He nods, and for a moment, there is something sad in his expression. Yeah, he finally says. It's weird, because there are moments when Tom seems terrified of any sort of commitment, and yet there are other times when we come across a family being cute together, like now, and I can see the longing in his eyes. I have gently broached the idea of children, just to see where he stands on it. I'm very clear that I am not expecting him to impregnate me in the near future, just trying to get his general thoughts on the idea of fatherhood. But he has been remarkably evasive. Tom reaches for my hand across the table. He smiles at me, tracing the blue veins on the back of my hand with his thumb. It's something he does a lot. I wonder what he's thinking. He looks like he wants to say something, but isn't sure if he should. Do you know why veins are blue? He asks. Okay, that definitely wasn't what I expected him to say. Is it because the blood in veins doesn't have oxygen in them? Common misconception. He presses his thumb into a vein running over the back of my hand until it compresses. But untrue. Deoxygenated blood is still red, although darker. The reason veins are blue is because skin absorbs blue light. The subcutaneous fat will only allow blue light to penetrate to the veins, so this is what you see reflected back by your retina. Tom is always full of interesting facts like that. On one of our dates, he gave me a spontaneous lecture about von Willebrand factor. He seemed a bit embarrassed after, but I thought it was sort of sweet that he bothered to learn about my disorder. I mean, he must have read up about it. There's no way he could have known all that off the top of his head. So, I say, any interest in seeing a movie this afternoon? Actually, I can't. Working? He shakes his head. My mother is driving in this morning, and I'm going to see her. She's coming over to my place, then we're going to have dinner. Considering his father is out of the picture, he seems to have a healthy enough relationship with his mother. Do you want me to come? He yanks his hand away from mine, no longer interested in my veins or why they look blue. He looks like he's about to spit out the coffee he just drank. To dinner with my mother? Well, that answers that question, doesn't it? You don't have to say it like I suggested you drink poison. We've only been dating for a few months, Sydney. My cheeks burn. I have completely lost my appetite for the rest of the French toast. Right, I get it. A few months isn't very long. I said I get it. Tom toys with his napkin, obviously trying to figure out a way to make this right. It's not the first time I've gotten a reaction like this out of him. When I suggested a double date with Gretchen and Randy, he looked like he was about to pop an aneurysm. Granted, he's right. We've only been dating for a short time. But at the same time, I wish he didn't look quite so horrified when I suggested things like that. Maybe next time, he mumbles. Yeah, right. But what can I do? I can either dump the guy because he has commitment issues, or I can hope that things change and continue enjoying incredible sex. So what are you doing with your mom then? I ask. He rubs his chin. I thought I might take her to that Middle Eastern restaurant you dragged me to a couple of weeks ago. That was really good. What was it called again? Let me check. Tom takes another drink of his coffee while I scroll on my phone, trying to figure out the name of the place we went to. Gretchen recommended it, so I have to scroll through our text messages. While I'm doing this, our waitress comes over and flirts shamelessly with Tom. To his credit, he just smiles politely back. He's charming, but not a flirt, which I appreciate. Finally, I find the link to the restaurant's name and address. I copy the link and text it to Tom. I sent you the link, I tell him. I look over at his phone, which he placed on the table at some point during the meal, waiting for it to buzz with a text. But it stays silent. That's weird, I say. Did you get my text with the name of the restaurant? He looks down at the screen of his phone, which is black. Yeah, I think so. How do you know that? You didn't even touch your phone and the screen is black. Well, the phone is on silent. No, it's not. It just buzzed 10 minutes ago. I don't know. Tom grabs his phone and shoves it in his pocket. I'm sure I got your text. Anyway, do you really want me looking at my phone while we're eating together? You're constantly looking at your phone while we're eating. Well, I get texts from work. I have to see if they're important. I don't know why Tom is being difficult right now. I'm not asking him to fly around the earth backward. I just want him to look down at his phone so that he can confirm he got my message. It would take all of half a second. Why are you being weird about this? I narrow my eyes at him. Why can't you tell me if you got my text or not? Jesus, fine. He takes the phone out of his pocket and taps on the screen. I got your text, okay? So what's the name of the restaurant? Tom looks down at the screen, then up at my face. He lets out a long sigh. Fine, I didn't get the text message. Okay, I am utterly confused. Why is he lying about this? It doesn't make any sense. So should I send it again? His jaw tightens. Send it later. But I'm not listening to him. I send the text message a second time and look up at him. Did you get it? My phone is broken. Don't worry about it. My mom likes Italian food better anyway. He is squirming in his seat. He looks so uncomfortable. What the hell is going on? Send me a text message, I say.
What? Why?
Why don't you want to send me a text message? Tom finally puts down his phone on the table.
Look, he says, this is my work phone. That's why I don't get your text messages on it.
Your work phone? I look down at his iPhone, which looks like the standard one that everybody I know owns. It seems to be the one he always carries. So where is your personal phone?
I don't have it with me. It's at home.
So you carry your work phone, but not your personal phone? He shrugs.
I guess. Like I said, I need to make sure there are no emergencies at work.
What kind of emergencies? Your patients are already dead. He shoves his phone back in his pocket.
Look, you asked me a question and I gave you the answer. I don't know what you want from me.
What do I want? I want to know why the number I have for him is clearly not his main phone number. Because I don't believe that the phone he carries around all the time is not his personal phone. That was a bullshit excuse if I have ever heard one. But there's no point in insisting on an answer. One thing is very clear. Tom is not willing to tell me the truth.
Chapter 40. Before. Tom. Almost as soon as I get home from school, I get another call from my mother. Again, I hesitate before picking it up. She's probably heard about Allison's disappearance, and she's not going to be thrilled to hear my father is nowhere to be found. She's not getting back till tomorrow, and I don't want her to panic. Still, I have to answer the phone. Given everything that's going on, if I don't answer, she'll probably have the police at my door within the hour. I have to pretend like everything is completely fine. This will have to be an Academy Award-winning performance. Hi, Mom, I say, trying to sound as normal as I possibly can.
Tommy!
Her voice crackles on the other line.
I've been so worried about you. I heard on the news about that missing girl. Isn't that Daisy's friend?
I guess, I say. I didn't know her very well. Why can't I stop talking about her in the past tense, for Christ's sake? My mother doesn't seem to notice, though.
It's so terrifying, she goes on, especially after that other girl turned up dead.
Have you heard anything about what might have happened to her? No, I say, even though I actually could give her a very informative answer.
Anyway, she says, are you okay?
Fine.
Where's your father?
I knew the question was coming, and yet I still don't have a great answer. He went to work. Actually, I decided to call him at work after all, and they said he never showed up this morning. She pauses. Is he asleep upstairs? You don't need to cover for him. If I tell her he's asleep upstairs, she might ask me to wake him up. I can't risk it. He just left. He said he was going to O'Toole's. I know from experience that nobody ever picks up the phone at the bar. The lie feels safe.
Okay.
My mother lets out a long breath. She sounds so worried, and I almost feel sorry for her, except I don't. Her life is going to change for the better because of what I did to that man. Both of our lives are going to change for the better. Well, as long as I don't get caught.
I'll be home tomorrow, she says. Just be careful, sweetheart.
I will, Mom. It feels like there's something very evil out there. Just stay home and don't let anybody in the house besides your father. So, nobody then. Tomorrow, my mother will be home, and I'll have to try to convince her that we shouldn't call the police on my father. It won't be difficult. She hates calling the police about my father's antics because it makes us look like trash. But it certainly wouldn't be the first time someone called the cops on my father. He has a reputation in our small town for being an asshole when he's drunk. As for Allison, though, that's a completely different problem. I just have to hope for the best. Chapter 41. We didn't get any homework at school today because Allison's disappearance was such a distraction. So I've spent the majority of the afternoon and evening watching the local news. I tried watching a few sitcoms, but I couldn't focus and eventually went back to the news. It's mostly the same story again and again. 17-year-old Allison Danziger was discovered to be missing from her home this morning. The police are searching for her and following up several promising leads. No persons of interest have yet been identified in her disappearance. At some point, I force myself to eat dinner, a bag of Doritos washed down with a bottle of Sprite. Somewhere between opening the bag and scraping the bottom, I drift off on the sofa. I wouldn't have thought it was possible, but I spent most of the last 36 hours awake. I am jarred back into consciousness by the sound of my cell phone ringing. I locate it in the folds of the sofa, and my heart leaps at Daisy's name on the screen. I haven't spoken to Daisy since she sobbed in my arms this morning.
"Tom!"
She's crying when I answer the phone, as if she never stopped after this morning.
"Oh, Tom!"
"What? What's going on?" I'm half scared she's going to tell me that her father is on his way here to arrest me.
"They found Allison!"
For a split second, this strikes me as a good thing. Allison just ran away, and now she's been found. And maybe my dad really is at the bar right now. Except, if it's a good thing, how come Daisy is crying so hard?
"They just pulled her body out of the river!"
Her sobs became almost hysterical.
"Tom!"
The river. That's where Slug wanted to throw my father's body initially. It's his favorite spot. Daisy is crying too hard to give me any more details. I haven't seen anything on the news, so I assume Daisy must have heard from her father. I wonder what else he said to her.
"He was mutilated,"
Daisy manages.
"I heard my father talking about it on the phone. He said she... It looks like she was tortured."
Like Brandy. I get a terrible, sinking feeling in my stomach as I remember how Slug's name got called when they were interviewing students for a second time about what happened to Brandy. I had thought he barely knew her, but obviously, I was wrong. What did I unleash? I hear loud voices in the background on the other end of the line, and Daisy's voice becomes hushed.
I better go. My father doesn't want me talking to you.
Even though I suspected it, that one is a jab in the chest. He doesn't?
I'm sorry. It's not you. He just doesn't trust any kids at the high school right now.
It's a relief to hear that I'm not a primary suspect. Although, why would I be? All he knows is that Allison and I didn't get along. Yes, I am the mystery boyfriend who was meeting Brandy the night she was killed, but as far as I know, the chief isn't aware of that. The only other person who knew is Allison, and she's gone. Before I can say anything else, there's another loud voice in the background.
I have to go, Tom. I'll talk to you later.
I love you, Daisy, I say into the phone, but she's already hung up.
Chapter 42. Before. Tom.
By the next morning, there's no shortage of news coverage about Allison Danziger. I've seen the footage of the river where Allison's body was found no less than 5 million times. I keep watching it again and again and again. School gets called off, so it's just me in the house, alone, obsessively watching the news. I want to give Slug a call or send him a text, but I'm scared someone is monitoring our phone lines or something like that. Anyway, the only person I really want to talk to is Daisy. My mother walks in the door at about 4 o'clock, a large duffel bag hung on her shoulder. I jump off the couch to help her carry it inside, but she's much more interested in hugging me, so I drop the bag.
"Oh, Tommy."
She squeezes me much too tightly. But unlike my father, my mother's much smaller than I am and couldn't hurt me even if she wanted to.
"I was so worried about you."
"I'm fine.
But that girl..."
My mother pulls away from me.
"They found her dead, didn't they?"
"Yes, they did." And now, I can talk about her in the past tense all I want. She's quiet for a moment, pressing her lips together. I take the opportunity to grab her bag again. I'll take this upstairs for you. Before she can protest, I hurry upstairs with the duffel bag on my shoulder. I bring it to my parents' bedroom and leave it on the bed. My father hasn't slept here for the last 2 nights, but he never bothers to make the bed, so the sheets are still in disarray from 2 days ago. It looks like he could have slept here last night. Nobody can prove otherwise. When I get downstairs, my mother is standing in the living room, wringing her hands together.
Tom, where is your father?
Great. She's barely stepped in the door, and already she started in about this. I thought maybe I'd have at least until dinner. At work, I guess.
I called the store. He didn't come in again today.
I lift a shoulder. I don't know then.
Did you see him this morning?
Yes. She chews on her lower lip.
You know, his car is in the garage. I was going to pull mine in, but his is already there.
I guess he walked wherever he went. As if my father ever walked anywhere. He never passed up an opportunity to drive drunk. But he's got plenty of friends who could have driven him somewhere. I knew the car would make my mother suspicious, but it would be worse to abandon it somewhere on the side of the road where the police could easily discover it. She frowns.
But you saw him this morning. You asked me that. I told you I did.
She drops her eyes. She seems to be looking at something.
I'm driven nuts trying to work out what, when suddenly she blurts out, "What happened to my rug?"
Oh, Christ, the missing rug. I forgot about that. I spilled cranberry juice all over it, and it got stained, so I threw it out.
You threw it out?
Her eyes widen.
Tom, you shouldn't have done that. I could have gotten it cleaned.
I'm sorry, it was a really bad stain, and I figured there was nothing we could do.
Is it still out by the curb then, or...
Sorry, the garbage man took it to the dump. It's too late.
Oh, Tom, she sighs. I wish you hadn't done that. I really loved that rug. I know it was a little ragged and it snagged our feet, but I've had it for a long time and I was attached to it.
Somehow, I imagine a similar conversation would take place between the two of us if I told her what really happened to my father.
Anyway,
she looks down at her watch. I'm going to lie down for an hour or so. Then I'll get started on dinner. Do you think your father will be home in time to eat with us?
He said he probably wouldn't.
She doesn't look surprised.
Okay,
just the two of us then. She trudges up the stairs to the bedroom, her shoulders sagging. I watch her go all the way up, and I wait for the sound of the bedroom door closing before I turn on the television to watch the news one more time.
Chapter 43. Present Day. Sydney. Okay, I agree. That phone thing is super weird. Since Tom blew me off to spend time with his mother without me, I went over to Gretchen and Randy's apartment. Randy is off running errands, but Gretchen was willing to listen to the entire story about Tom's phone not taking my calls. And she looks properly perplexed. What do you think it means? Gretchen asks as she stuffs a handful of popcorn into her mouth. Gretchen is the kind of person who always feels like she needs to make a snack when I come over, which is kind of sweet. I lift a shoulder. I mean, it's not good that my boyfriend is apparently calling me and texting me from a secret phone. He could be telling you the truth. You said he's a workaholic, so it makes sense he wants his work phone with him, and he doesn't have a purse like we do to carry multiple phones. Yeah. I grab some popcorn, which Gretchen has placed in a wooden bowl on the coffee table. I wouldn't make that big a deal out of it, but he got so uncomfortable when I started asking him about it. It really seemed like he was hiding something. So what do you think he's hiding? Her eyes widen. Do you think he could be married? I really, really don't think so. I've seen his apartment. There's no woman living there. Plus, he doesn't seem worried about being seen in public. Although, whenever we go out to eat, we always go to a different restaurant. Always. Jake and I had a diner we went to nearly every weekend.
but Tom seems very resistant to having a regular place. So what then? I don't know what to think. I genuinely don't think there's another woman in the picture, but the fact that Tom only carries around his work phone is a decidedly bad sign. It means he's even more of a workaholic than I suspected. That's the kind of thing Jake would do, and we all know how wonderfully that worked out. And I don't want things to fall apart with Tom the way they did with Jake. He's such a good guy. He's sweet, he's intelligent, he loves his mother, and also he is very easy on the eyes. Oh my God, I'm really falling for him. Let's have dinner together, Gretchen suggests. I'm an excellent judge of character. I'll tell you in 2 seconds if he's two-timing you. Sorry, he won't do that. Why not? You should have seen his face when I suggested meeting my friends. I told you, he has commitment issues. I make a face. He's still hung up on this girl he was in love with in high school. Oh my God! Gretchen covers her mouth. In high school? Seriously? I know, but it sounds like he wanted to marry her, and then she died or something. He looked so sad when he was talking about her. Aw, that's sweet, though. I lean back against the cushions of the sofa, my head spinning. I don't know what to do. I really am starting to fall for Tom, but at the same time, the number of red flags has become almost unacceptable. I could deal with his unwillingness to meet my friends, but this phone thing is really bugging me. Maybe I should have Jake do a background check on him. Of course, that would be completely humiliating. I don't want to tell my old boyfriend that the guy I've replaced him with is so untrustworthy that he requires a background check if I'm to proceed with our relationship. I'd rather Jake think that I am dating an amazing guy and that he missed out because he couldn't make time for me. Besides, Jake has his hands full. I haven't seen anything in the papers about an arrest for Bonnie's murder, or for those other two women either. If they arrested anyone, I would definitely know about it. By the way, Gretchen says, my exhibit at the museum is going to be closing soon. I want you to come by and see it before it's gone. I laugh. I already saw it. I know, she admits, but I want my friends to be there one more time before they take it all down. I worked so hard on it. I know you did. That was all you could talk about for months. It used to really bother Bonnie how much Gretchen talked about it, but I don't mention that. There's no point in tainting Gretchen's memories of Bonnie by cluing her in that her friends sometimes found her very irritating. It consumed me, she admits. Even the night before, I was at the museum half the night working on it. I frown. Something about Gretchen's statement tugs at me, but I can't quite put my finger on what it is. And before I can figure it out, a key turns in the lock to the front door and Gretchen's eyes light up. Randy is back. I wonder what he got. What was he getting exactly? I say. One of the tenants gave him a gift card for some extra work he did, Gretchen explains. So he took it to a department store in Herald Square. He said he was going to buy something to christen the apartment now that I've moved in. Isn't that sweet? Like a painting? I have no idea, but Randy has such great taste, so I'm sure he's getting something good. Randy has great taste? I glance around their bare-bones apartment, which looks only slightly different from the way it did when it was his bachelor pad. And the guy only wears jeans and t-shirts, sometimes a hoodie. What exactly is she basing her great taste assessment on? But whatever. Gretchen is in love, and she thinks Randy is perfect. Randy bursts into the apartment, and he's holding something large, at least 2 feet wide, in his arms. I'm not entirely sure what it is, though. It looks like a glass structure filled with dirt. From Gretchen's expression, I can tell she is equally perplexed. She climbs to her feet, her hands on her hips. What is that? She asks.
It's an ant farm, Randy says proudly.
A what? It would be an understatement to say that Gretchen does not look thrilled. In fact, she looks like she wants to punch Randy in the face, except that he might drop the ant farm and break it open.
It's an ant farm, Randy repeats. I thought we could put it over there by the window. That way we'll be able to see everything happening on the farm.
Oh, no!
Gretchen jumps in front of him as if to block him from entering the room with his glass container filled with ants.
I don't want that thing in my apartment. No way!
Why not? His forehead scrunches up. It's so cool.
No, it's not, she cries. What if the ants get free?
The ants won't get free.
The ants will definitely get free.
Gretchen throws up her arms and looks over at me.
Sydney, help me out here.
An ant farm is pretty gross, Randy, I say. He lowers the ant farm onto the floor, and Gretchen instinctively takes a few steps back.
Well, I don't know what you want me to do, Gretchen. I can't return it. Am I supposed to throw them away?
I don't care what you do with them, she cries. You can flush them down the toilet for all I care.
Randy's face darkens.
I'm not doing that. That's horrible.
Gretchen is really freaked out about those ants. I don't blame her. I wouldn't want them in my house either. Her face has turned all pink, and now I feel like a bad argument is brewing.
I better go, Gretchen, I say. But, good luck.
As I hurry out of Gretchen and Randy's apartment, something is still tugging at me. Something Gretchen said, but I can't quite put my finger on what it is. I'll figure it out eventually. Chapter 44. I end up ordering in Chinese food for dinner. I order way too much. I always get way too much when I order Chinese food. But it's not like I can get a delivery guy to come over here to bring me one measly container of chicken with broccoli. So I end up ordering 3 or 4 dishes, figuring I'll eat it eventually, and then it all sits in the refrigerator until it starts to smell bad and I have to throw it all away. And then a week later, I'm craving Chinese food and I go through the entire cycle again. I call it the circle of Chinese food. While I am eating my beef chow foon, debating if I should take a Tums now or after the meal is over, I consider sending Tom a text message. We left things a bit frosty after he refused to let me meet his mother and got all evasive about his phone. Of course, if I do send him a text message, God knows where it will go. No, let him have a night to stew and decide whether he wants to tell me the truth. Anyway, I've got other things on my mind. Namely, my conversation with Gretchen. I keep going over what we were talking about, and something keeps tugging at me, but what is it? Even the night before, I was at the museum half the night working. It's hard to forget the day Gretchen's exhibit opened. It was the same day that Randy and I found Bonnie mutilated in her bedroom. Bonnie and I had made plans to go together to see it. Naturally, that ended up not happening. Even the night before, I was at the museum half the night working. When I was talking to Jake about possible suspects, I mentioned Randy. I didn't want to incriminate him, but I felt compelled to point out the fact that he had a copy of the keys for the entire building and that Bonnie repeatedly complained that she thought he was creepy. It wasn't evidence that he was a murderer. But Jake told me he had been ruled out.
Mr. Muncy has an alibi for last night. His girlfriend was with him the entire time.
Except Gretchen, his girlfriend, was not with him the entire night. She was at the museum half the night working on her exhibit. Holy crap. I snatch up my phone and select Gretchen's number from my list of contacts. The phone rings a few times before she picks up.
What's up, Sid?
Gretchen, I say, where were you really on the night that Bonnie was murdered? There's a long pause on the other end of the line.
What?
When I was at your apartment earlier, I say, you told me that the night before your exhibit opened, you were at the museum half the night working on it. But you told the police you were with Randy the whole night. Except you weren't. Another extended silence.
Right. Well, I must have made a mistake. I was home the night before the exhibit opened. It was the night before that when I was at the museum half the night.
Gretchen?
It's true.
I grind my teeth. Please stop. I know what you said.
And I remember when the exhibit opened.
Sydney,
tell me the truth. Gretchen's voice breaks.
Fine. I was at the museum. I lied to the police. Is that what you want to hear?
Oh my God, I exclaim. You lied to the police? Seriously?
What was I supposed to do?
She whimpers.
Look, Randy didn't hurt Bonnie. He never could have done something like that. But if he didn't have an alibi, they would have been all over him. He's the super, and he has the keys, and also...
And also what? Gretchen is silent. Gretchen, what is it? What's going on?
This is going to sound worse than it is, she says softly.
I frown. What is?
A number of years ago, she says, like way before Randy and I even met, there was this girl who accused him of stalking her.
My mouth falls open. What?
And then there was this assault charge too, but it was so unfair. She goes on. He told me all about it, and seriously, he didn't do anything wrong. But with that in his record, we both thought it would be better if he had an alibi.
We both thought it would be better. Gretchen, I say, did Randy ask you to lie for him?
No,
she cries.
I mean, it was his suggestion, but I completely agreed. He didn't push me into anything.
This is just great. You have to go to the police and tell them the truth.
No! Please don't make me, Sid.
If she wasn't crying before, I have definitely pushed her over the edge.
Randy is not a murderer. He's not. You don't really think he could have done those terrible things to Bonnie, do you?
I don't know.
He didn't,
she sobs.
I love him, Sydney. I've never felt this way about a man before. I want to spend the rest of my life with him.
My stomach turns slightly at the idea of Gretchen marrying Randy Muncy. I've known him for 2 years, and he might be a little quirky, but I am having trouble imagining him doing all those terrible things to Bonnie. And Gretchen clearly loves him with all her heart. Still, there is something about him that makes me uneasy. I chew on my lower lip, trying to decide what to do. I've got Jake's number in my phone, and Bonnie's murder is still unsolved. I could call him and tell him about Gretchen's lie. But at the same time, if I genuinely don't think he killed her, what will I have accomplished? I'll have made my friend's life a lot worse, betrayed her trust, destroyed Randy's reputation, and possibly jeopardized his job. And for what? If it doesn't lead to justice for my friend, there's no point. Besides, Jake told me they had unidentified, matching fingerprints at the two crime scenes. But if Randy's fingerprints are on file, it couldn't have been him. Could it?
Sid?
Gretchen sniffles.
Are you going to tell anyone?
I guess not.
Oh, thank you.
I can imagine Gretchen's eyes filled with tears, her small nose bright pink.
Thank you so much, Sid. You are the best friend ever. If Randy and I get married someday, I'm going to make you the maid of honor at my wedding.
Ugh. It would almost be worth it to turn Randy in just to avoid that dubious honor. Gretchen spends the next several minutes tripping over herself to tell me how grateful she is and how lucky she is to have Randy. I soak it in. But the whole time, I can't help but wonder if I am making a terrible mistake.
Chapter 45. Before. Tom. After eating nothing but junk food and soda for the last 2 days, it's nice to have my mother cooking dinner tonight. Slog, on the other hand, would happily eat nothing but junk food for every meal. And I think sometimes he does, which is part of why his skin is so bad. While we eat a hot meal of chicken and rice at the kitchen table, my mother talks about Uncle Dave's procedure because she knows it's usually the sort of thing that would fascinate me. But I'm not in the mood right now. I pretend I'm listening, though. I nod at all the right places, and I manage a smile when she tells me Uncle Dave made it home and is doing well.
but in reality, it's all just background noise.
How is Daisy doing?
My mother asks me when she finishes the story about Uncle Dave.
Daisy? Well, she and Allison were close, weren't they?
Sort of.
She must be very upset.
I wouldn't know. I tried calling Daisy multiple times today, and each time, her phone went to voicemail. I don't want to tell my mother that Daisy's father won't let her talk to me, because then I'll have to tell her why.
You know,
my mother says thoughtfully,
I wonder.
I have no idea what terrible thing my mother is wondering about, because at that moment, the doorbell rings. She swivels her head in the direction of the front door.
Do you think your father forgot his key?
I don't know who is at the door, but I know it's not my father searching for his house key.
Maybe.
Mom wipes her face with a napkin, then heads over to the front door. I rise from my own seat and quietly creep over to see who is there. I'm convinced it must be the police, but instead, I find my mother talking to a middle-aged man with a beer belly and a comb-over. He seems to be handing her something. Then they talk for another minute in quiet voices.
Who is that?
My mother closes the door behind her, and she looks surprised to see me standing in the foyer.
Tom, she says, I didn't see you there.
That's when I notice what's in her hand, the object the man handed to her. It's a phone.
That was the bartender at O'Toole's, she says. Your father left his phone there,
she adds, 2 nights ago. I don't know what to say to that.
Oh, did he tell you he lost his phone?
I shake my head slowly.
No, he didn't mention it.
She looks over her shoulder at the door, then back at me.
And the bartender says he hasn't been back there since leaving his phone, and he hasn't been at work either. So where do you think he's been?
My mouth is dry. I remind myself that even if she is suspicious that something happened to my father, it doesn't mean she knows what happened. Although she did see me threatening him with a fire poker once. Still, she looks down at the floor, and I can almost see the gears turning in her brain. I wish they would stop. Can't she just stop thinking about it and let us enjoy our dinner?
Tom, she says, when did you put the rug out by the curb?
Damn rug again. I should never have let him crawl out of the kitchen. I should have slit his throat right there, and then we wouldn't be having this discussion.
2 days ago, I say. So Tuesday?
Yes. She frowns.
But garbage pickup is on Monday. So how could they have already taken the rug away?
I open my mouth, but nothing comes out. She has made an excellent point. I don't know how to explain why the rug is gone. It doesn't make sense that I would have driven it down to the dump myself. And I already told her that the garbage man took it. I can't tell her the truth, that's for sure.
My mother lifts her chin to look up at me.
Over the last 2 years, I've surpassed her in height, which is still a little strange for me. As she studies my face, I can't help but notice her exposed carotid artery, and I can just barely make out its quickened pulsation in her neck.
Tom, she says softly.
She's waiting for me to say something, but there's nothing I can say. Thankfully, I am saved by the sound of the doorbell ringing yet again. My shoulders sag in relief. I don't know if the bartender has another question for my mother, but at least I've got a few minutes to plan out what I'm going to say next. But my relief is short-lived when I see who is standing at our front door. It's Chief Driscoll.
Chapter 46.
The chief of police is at my front door. It was hard enough when he questioned me at school, but showing up at my home is on another level. Why is he here? Is it about Allison?
Sorry to bother you, Mrs. Brewer.
Chief Driscoll is wearing the same checked tie and white dress shirt he had on this morning, but this time paired with a blue blazer.
I just have a few questions for Tom.
Despite the fact that she was quizzing me herself a few moments ago, my mother steps between me and the police chief.
About what?
He presses his lips together, obviously nonplussed that she won't step back and let him in.
About Allison Danziger.
My mother considers this, but she doesn't move away from the door. Why do you need to talk to Tom about her?
Allison was brutally murdered. Chief Driscoll's voice is grave. I'm talking to everyone who knew Allison well, in hopes that we can find the monster who did this and bring them to justice. I am almost hoping that my mother will continue to refuse to allow him into the house, but instead, she steps aside. At the same time, I instinctively take a step back.
You can talk in the living room, Jim, Mom tells him.
I follow my mother into the living room, giving myself a pep talk in my head. I already talked to the police chief. He doesn't know anything, or else he would be handcuffing me as we speak. He's just fishing.
I sit on the couch, and my mother sits next to me, her leg nearly touching mine.
The chief sits on my father's armchair across from us. He's wearing that same grim expression he had in the principal's office, except much worse. Because back then, they were hoping they might find Allison alive. Now they know what has happened to her. There's no hope for Allison. All they can do is bring her killer to justice.
Tom?
He grimaces. Daisy told me she spoke to you about how we found Allison.
Yes. Although she didn't tell me anything that hasn't been all over the news for almost the last 24 hours.
I've also heard from several students, he continues, that you and Allison did not get along. She wasn't happy about you dating Daisy.
My mother stiffens beside me, and I have to struggle to keep my composure.
It wasn't a big deal.
He clears his throat.
And you told me you were home the night before last?
Right, I confirm. All night.
And your father was here with you?
Right.
The chief casts a look in the direction of the stairs. Is your father here right now? Can I speak with him?
My husband isn't here at the moment, my mother speaks up. But I'll have him call you as soon as he gets back.
Where is he?
Still at work, my mother says, without hesitation. He nods, accepting my mother's lie. I don't know why she lied on my behalf. She knows he's not at work.
Please have him call me as soon as possible, the chief says.
Absolutely.
My mother wrinkles her brow.
But honestly, Jim, I'm not sure how you think Tom could possibly be involved in this. You've known my son since he was a baby. Do you really think he would do anything to hurt Allison?
I'm hoping he'll agree with her and say he's just doing his due diligence.
But that same sober expression never leaves his face.
I have to tell you, Luann, after talking with several students in the class, I have some concerns about Tom.
What the hell does that mean? Who is talking to him about me? And what did they say? What concerns? What concerns are you referring to? My mother snaps at him.
Just some rumors.
He rubs his hands over his knees.
About Tom and Allison. And about Tom and Brandy.
Oh no. Somebody told him about me and Brandy. Now he probably thinks I killed her.
I'll tell you what, the chief says to my mother. When your husband gets back, why don't the three of you come down to the station? I'd like to discuss all this in more detail and get a formal statement.
Come down to the station? That sounds terrifying. My husband will be tired when he gets back from work, my mother says stiffly.
Tomorrow morning, then.
I just don't understand all this suspicion around my son, Jim, she says. You know Tom is a good boy. You wouldn't have let him date your daughter otherwise.
No, he agrees. I wouldn't have.
It's at that moment I realize Chief Driscoll will never let me near Daisy ever again. Even if all this somehow blows over and I don't end up behind bars, what I had with Daisy is over. We're not going to the same college. We're not going to get married. It's over. But right now, I can't even think about any of that. I just want the chief out of my house. He stands up from the armchair, brushing off invisible dirt from the legs of his pants. He starts to turn to head for the door, but all of a sudden, he stops short.
Hey, he says, what's that?
I follow his line of vision,
which is directed at the side of the sofa. My throat constricts when I realize what he's looking at. There is a spot of dried blood on the sofa. I thought I cleaned off every bit of blood, but to be fair, it was everywhere. I wouldn't be surprised if there's more blood that I missed in some crack or crevice of the house. The sofa is not that close to where I slashed my father's throat, but arterial spray is very strong, and I'm sure I hit his carotid in addition to the jugular I was aiming for. Of course, Chief Driscoll can't know for sure that's what it is. It looks like a brownish-red circle on the tan fabric. But when I look up, my mother's face is the color of a sheet of paper. "We were painting," she says finally.
"Painting?"
He lifts an eyebrow. "That's a strange color for paint."
"We were painting an art project."
She looks over at me. "For Tom."
"I see."
He nods slowly.
"You mind if I get a sample of that paint?"
"Actually, I do mind."
My mother lifts her chin. "Tom and I were in the middle of having dinner, and we've given you enough of our time already. I don't see the point of you taking a sample of some paint on our sofa."
"It'll just take a second, Luann. I got a kid in the trunk of my car."
She narrows her eyes at him.
"Don't you need a warrant for something like that?"
Chief Driscoll takes a moment to absorb her words. Finally, he stuffs his hands into his pocket.
"If you want me to get a warrant, I'll go ahead and do that then."
My mother practically shoves the police chief out our front door, and I can't breathe normally until she's turned the lock. As soon as the deadbolt has been turned, my mother leans against the door, her shoulders heaving slightly, her eyes downcast.
"Mom?"
I say. She is looking down at the floor where the rug used to be.
"Go to your room, Tom. But go, please. I..."
She lifts her eyes to look at me.
"I need to be alone right now."
I do what my mother tells me. I head up the stairs to my room and shut myself inside. And when I come out to use the bathroom half an hour later, my mother is crouched in the living room, scrubbing at the base of the sofa.
Chapter 47. Present Day. Sydney. The next morning, I have a Zoom call with a new client. It's still sort of off-season for me, but a lot of people want to get their finances in order before the end of the calendar year. The man I'm meeting with is named Orson Finley, and our meeting starts in a few minutes, but I'm dreading it. I had a lot of trouble sleeping last night. I can almost feel the purple circles under my eyes, and there's a dull throbbing in my left temple. The last thing I want to do is meet a new client, but it would be unprofessional to cancel. I'm still not sure I'm doing the right thing by not going to the police about Randy's lack of an alibi. Do I genuinely think Randy is capable of murder? No, I don't. I really don't. But on the other hand, it wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world. It wouldn't be like finding out, I don't know, that my mom is a serial killer. Ultimately, the reason I don't go to the police or even Jake is because of Gretchen. I can't do it to her. If Randy has a criminal history, casting suspicion on him could be enough to wreck his life. Our landlord would almost certainly fire him if they thought there was even a tiny chance he could be responsible for Bonnie's murder. And it would take time and resources away from finding the real killer. The alert goes off on my phone that it's time to log into my call. I get on my computer, and before I connect, I give myself a once-over in the camera. I dabbed on some concealer that seems to be doing the trick, and I used some lipstick to brighten my face. My hair didn't want to behave this morning, so I pulled back my blonde-streaked strands into a ponytail. I ended up using that scrunchie Gretchen gave me to remember Bonnie, and I try my best not to think of the clump of hair missing from her scalp. I connect the Zoom call, and a second later, a face fills the screen. As the man's gaunt face and messy ponytail come into focus, recognition dawns on me, and the smile drops off my lips. "Kevin!" I gasp. "What the hell?" The man on the screen is Kevin, aka Real Kevin, aka Orson Finley, I guess.
At this point, I have no clue what his real name is. All I know for sure is that he has wasted a lot of my time.
I'm really so sorry to do this, Sydney.
His words come out in a jumble.
But every time I manage to find you, you don't want to talk to me.
Right. Most people would take a hint. I reach for my mouse to disconnect the call. Goodbye, Kevin, or Orson, or whatever your name is.
Please don't hang up.
He leans closer to the screen so that I can see the dark circles under his eyes.
Please, Sydney. We had one of the best dates I have ever been on. I mean, do you think I introduce my mother to every girl I go out with?
God, I hope not.
Kevin, you have to give me another chance, he pleads with me. Please, just hear me out. Give me 60 seconds.
Kevin,
60 seconds, please.
Against my better judgment, I nod. I'll give him 60 seconds to get it all out of his system, and I hope he'll leave me alone for good after that.
You need to know, he says, that I'm ashamed of the way I treated you the other night. I'm not an aggressive person, but I thought you felt the same way I did, and I took things too far. I'm ashamed, and my dear mother would be ashamed of me too if she knew. I own that, and I'm really sorry, Sydney.
The last thing I expected was an apology from this man, or any man, really. Despite everything, I am impressed. I appreciate that.
So what do you think? He presses me. Would you consider giving me a second chance?
Even though I appreciate his apology, I'm dating someone else. And even if I weren't, there's no way I'd ever go on another date with a guy who attacked me. How could he think I would? I don't think so, Kevin. His brown eyes bulge from their sockets in front of the camera.
Please, Sydney, I'm begging you. I'd make you so happy.
I'm sorry, I say, gently but firmly. But the answer is still no.
All I want is a chance to sit with you and look at you face to face, he pleads with me. It's not right that I only get to see you through a window.
Wait, what? What did you say?
I said I want to see you face to face.
No, I say through my teeth.
What did you say about the window?
Kevin has a deer in headlights look.
Window?
Shit. Before Kevin has a chance to utter another word, I hit the red button to disconnect the call. As soon as the screen goes black, I jump out of my ergonomic chair and cross the room to the window.
It's not right that I only get to see you through a window.
Has that creep been watching me? Horrified, I stare out my window down at the pedestrians and cars below. From the height of my apartment, the pedestrians look like ants and the cars like children's toys. Nobody could possibly see me up here. Could they? Then I lift my eyes to look at the buildings surrounding me. There are two buildings that have a very decent view of my own building. And within those buildings, there are literally hundreds of windows. Hundreds of opportunities for someone to be watching me. A chill runs down my spine. Maybe I should give Jake a call. Then again, he isn't one of those cops who's willing to use his badge to bend the rules and intimidate some jerk who won't leave me alone. He'll tell me I need to get a restraining order, and I just don't need to deal with that hassle right now on top of everything else. Besides, if I call Jake, I'm not going to be able to keep from telling him about Randy's lack of an alibi. I grab the string to lower the blinds, and I let out a sigh as they drop down, cutting off my view of the outside world and anyone else's view of me. There. Problem solved. Just as I'm contemplating what to do next, the doorbell rings. I jump away from the window, my heart pounding. Who is ringing my doorbell at 9 in the morning? I didn't buzz in any package delivery people. I look back at the computer screen. The Zoom call has ended, but what if Kevin wasn't at home during the call? His background was blurred, so he could have been anywhere. What if he is right outside my door? I grab my phone off my desk. Okay, there's no reason to panic. If Kevin is outside my door, I will call the police. The doors are pretty well made, and I doubt he could force his way in, especially with the deadbolt in place. I locked the deadbolt, didn't I? The doorbell rings a second time, the sound drawn out as if someone has jammed their finger into the button and left it there. Somebody badly wants to come inside. My heart is jackhammering in my chest as I run over to the front door, still feeling eyes on the back of my neck, even though the blinds are closed. Right away, I can see that I didn't lock the stupid deadbolt. Oh my God, how could I have been so stupid? This is fine. I'll call the police. Then I'll call Gretchen and Randy. Actually, this will be a good thing. I've been struggling to find a way to report Kevin, given I don't know anything about him. But if the police catch him here, then filing a restraining order will be a lot easier. I check the peephole and... oh, it's Randy. I unlock my one flimsy lock and throw open the door. Randy is standing in the hallway in his t-shirt and blue jeans, shifting between his dirty sneakers. He isn't much taller than Jake, but somehow he looks like a giant tree hovering over me.
"Hey, Sid," he says. "Can I talk to you?"
I hesitate. I can't help but remember that Randy doesn't have an alibi for the night of Bonnie's murder. There were no signs of forced entry, and he had a key. But I'm also having trouble imagining that Randy came to my apartment to kill me at 9 in the morning. And if he did, as I mentioned, he has a key, so he wouldn't have to ask permission. "Okay," I say, "come in." I step aside to allow Randy to enter my apartment. He looks incredibly nervous, which is making me nervous. What is he nervous about?
"So, listen," he says. "I need to show you something, but you can't tell anyone, okay?"
"Okay." Randy reaches into the pocket of his blue jeans. I swear to God, if he pulls out a clump of Bonnie's hair from his pocket, I am going to faint dead away. His pockets are deep, and he fishes around for a few seconds until he pulls out what he wants to show me. And it feels like all the air has been sucked out of me. Oh no. No. Chapter 48. I feel sick when I see the object in Randy's palm. Sick.
"I bought it yesterday," Randy
tells me, his eyes shining.
"Right before I got the ant farm."
With that preamble, Randy opens the blue velvet box in his hand. The ring inside is made of white gold and has a tiny diamond that sparkles in the overhead lights.
Sick. "I can return it if I need to," he says quickly. "So if you don't think Gretchen would like it, I could get another one."
"How about you return the ring and not get another one? How about you don't ask my best friend to marry you?" His face falls.
"Is the diamond too small?"
The diamond is really tiny, but I'm sure Gretchen will love it. The diamond isn't the problem. The problem is the guy giving her the diamond. I may not think Randy is a killer, but I still don't think he's good enough for Gretchen. She could do so much better, but she's not even looking because she's stuck with him. "It's a bit small." He stares critically at the tiny gem.
"I know. Believe me, I wanted to get her an enormous diamond because that's what she deserves. But they say 3 months' salary, and this cost me 6 months' salary. I can't do any bigger than this."
"If money is an issue, maybe now is the wrong time to propose. Maybe wait a few years." He rubs the back of his neck.
"But I love her. Gretchen is the best person I've ever met. I want to spend the rest of my life with her, making her happy."
His usually slightly beady eyes are open wide. He seems incredibly sincere. Randy might not be my favorite person in the whole world, but he loves Gretchen, and she's wild about him too. I would be an awful person to try to keep them apart, right?
I think she'll love that ring, I say begrudgingly. His face brightens.
You really think so?
Definitely.
Thanks, Sid.
He snaps the blue velvet box closed and shoves it back in his pocket.
I'm trying to figure out how I should ask her. Like, I should get down on one knee, right?
I can't help but smile. Yeah, you definitely should.
Do you think it would be lame if I wrote down what I want to say on index cards? He asks. I really want to get it perfect.
Honestly, I think she's going to say yes no matter what. Randy grins at me. I don't know if I have ever seen him smile that wide. I can't even imagine what he's going to look like when Gretchen agrees to marry him. And while I do believe she could do better, I can't deny that he clearly loves her. Gretchen's had her share of heartbreak, and she deserves a happy ending. At that moment, I realize that I can never tell anyone that Randy doesn't have an alibi for the night of Bonnie's murder. Chapter 49. Things have been a little tense between me and Tom. He texted me a few times the day after he blew me off for his mother, but I decided not to answer. I was irritated enough to let him stew a bit, and also still wound up over the situation with real Kevin. But then he sent me a text message inviting me to his apartment for a homemade candlelight dinner, and I decided I had punished him enough. Despite the fact that Tom must earn at least several times as much as I do, his building isn't any fancier than mine. Like me, he doesn't have a doorman. But even worse, he doesn't have an elevator. And he lives on the 5th floor. By the time I get up there, I am slightly out of breath. What can I say? Yoga is not an aerobic workout. I have to check my armpits to make sure they're not sweaty. Tom looks thrilled to see me when he opens the door. He grabs me and kisses me for like 60 seconds, which is a lot in kissing time.
I missed you, he whispers in my ear.
Well, I say, I might come to your apartment more if you didn't live in a 5th floor walk-up. I place a hand on my chest. My heart is still pounding. I might be having a heart attack.
You know, when you're exercising, he says in that excited voice he always uses when he's telling me some factoid about the human body. The blood vessels supplying your muscles expand to bring more blood to them, so the heart has to pump more blood. Your heart beats faster to maintain your blood pressure.
Wow, fascinating, Dr. Brewer. He laughs.
Anyway, it would be impossible to get my furniture downstairs if I wanted to move, so I'm pretty much stuck here forever.
If Tom and I ever decided to live together, he could move into my building, or else we could find a different place to start fresh. But even as I'm thinking that, in my heart I know that Tom will never ask me to live with him. Come on in. He takes me by the hand and tugs me into the living room, where he indeed has a candle burning on the table. He has set up 2 place settings, including bottles of water, because what comes out of his tap is slightly brown, and between them is a brown paper sack. Let's eat before it gets cold.
I feel like I was promised a homemade dinner.
He nods soberly. Yes, I realize that. But then I got stuck late at work and realized that while I'm an excellent cook, I'm also excellent at calling Luigi's to order a delicious dinner for 2.
Fair enough. Okay, let me grab utensils. I walk into Tom's kitchen, and as I'm heading over to the drawer to get the silverware, I notice movement on the floor in the gap between the refrigerator and the cabinets. I crouch down to get a better look, and then...